Yeah, I'm Jackson. I have zero experience with carpentry.
I studied at a school for historic preservation in Boston and learned about how things were built, you know, 250 years ago.
There's a long way to go. I'm nowhere near the top. Not that I thought I was, but there's so much more to do out there.
Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. Today we are talking about minimalism and how it's killing design and craft and beauty and fun things. So Austin brought this up on a trip to Austin. Austin, by the way, you got shouted out like crazy. They said Austin puts Jamie from Joe Rogan to shame. So it's some high praise. Yeah.
Who said that?
A patron.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
You can get their name up to shout them out properly. But I think Austin brought this up. He was on a trip to Austin recently and said how there is a movement towards minimalism where all the houses look like kids' drawings of a house, where they're just the simplest version, the dumbed down version of design. And correct me if I'm misrepresenting you, but that's kind of the vibe of what is going on. Yeah, there's a great example of that. But there's also been this trend, I would say, in culture, and he was referencing this as well, with logos. They have all gotten simpler as time has gone on, a more minimalist approach. I'm even designing a t-shirt for our K-Life leaders right now, and my Google search history would lend towards this. I'm like looking up like minimalist design of an elk so that I can put on like a, you know, K-Life logo next to a cool elk.
In a way, I think there's like some reverse going on here. What I mean by that is like, I feel like those logos on the left that are like the more elaborate ones mm-hmm. are what like big builders are trying to do now. And the logo that's more simplified is like what we came from. Like older houses seem to be a little bit more simpler, but more architecturally correct. Whereas like the big McMansion builders of today are trying to add like, oh, look, let's put these reflections on the Warner Brothers thing. That'll draw more people in. So
interesting.
But I think it can be viewed from both ways, you know, because there's definitely more detail in the logos on the left. But like in housing, like the older houses seem like they're more detailed, you know.
It's really interesting.
Go ahead. We have people who can edit. I was trying to find the patron.
Well, I thought it was an interesting observation. Part of it is that Austin is a modern market. And so, you know, there isn't the ICA of Texas has like one representative from Austin. Got good one in Houston. San Antonio's two. You know, there's a number in Dallas and Fort Worth. And so Austin doesn't have any, or kind of one guy, and he kind of practices a little bit. But you'd think in a city as, you know, hip and hopping as Austin is, that it would have, you'd have a wider representation, but it tends to be a modern market. So part of what's going on there is that what's determined as hip and cool there is that modern farmhouse, you know. You know, that if you go back to that picture, Austin, you know, that picture of that house where, you know, they've got all the boxes checked, right? They got the box, right, on the left. They've got the, you know, the gable end. They've got the horizontal window and, you know, no columns. And so, you know, they go, okay, it's.
What do you mean all the boxes checked? Like that's farmhouse modern boxes or what?
Just like if an architect was saying, I want to do something cool. I want to do something that's, you know.
Unique.
You got to do a horizontal window. You got to do this lack of symmetry. You know, this things where it looks like a bunch of shoe boxes that have been pushed out of this thing. That's the shoe box, you know, pushed out on the left side. And. But they've still hinting at traditionalism, okay, because you've got a gable end and a porch, but they're treating it and, you know, executing it in a very modern way. And so it's trip, it's cool, baby. It's hip, you know, because we're tipping our hand to what's traditional, but we're doing it in a better way, which I don't mind. It's not the end of the world. It is you know, that looks like it's been designed as opposed to a builder house where it looks like it's been assembled.
That's for some reason that looks like the side of the house.
Or like, yeah.
You know?
The, back, the side yeah, that's yeah. facing us.
Because like, the dormer is facing the side.
Yeah.
That's kind of like a little strange.
Like and the materials, the right? Side. The materials they're using are that, you know, that barn dominium kind of, you know, vertical siding.
Board and, or the batten.
Board and batten yeah. look, but it looks like it's metal. Maybe it's just
hard. Another thing, I watched your story a couple of days ago on Instagram and you were talking about the windows that you were frustrated on that
Gosh,
house.
Gosh, that was unbelievable. It's
like the same thing here.
I was shocked. It was
what was it?
What we need to do sometime is we need to get hidden cameras and we need to walk into the Windows World store and look at windows on this show. Can we do that?
All three of us. It's like some FBI agents.
I don't know
agents.
How we do it where we carry it in a briefcase yeah. and the cameras in the briefcase
like,
or something.
Sir, why do you have your...
Jokers does a coffee cup with a microphone in it and then they do, I don't know where their cameras are. But
we need to walk in there because we would have a heyday talking about the windows and stuff. And then I realized they're so cheap. I just ought to go buy three of them.
Oh yeah.
And you know, 50 cents later, I've got, you know, the windows here and we can just talk about them here. So, but it was, yeah, it was a story about a house that I drive by on the way home and they've got the windows like this. And what's happening is
you're talking about the horizontal windows.
I'm talking about all the windows on that house. Okay. See how they are projected right to the front face of the house.
Yeah.
Historic windows like this one. See how the sash is set back from that brick mold 4 inches, 5 inches. Those are set back. You know, they're not set back. They're flush facing. So what that does is that keeps. And look at the house next door. Looks like the windows are set back a little bit on that.
Mm-hmm.
The what you're seeing there is the cheapest form of the window that you can get, because this window I was looking at was probably an inch and a half thick.
Mm-hmm. It didn't even cover the framing.
It didn't even cover the framing. Mm-hmm. So you had a 2x4, and then I started looking. I go, maybe that's a 2x6 because the window was still showing so much wood, and it was a double hung window in vinyl, and it was sitting right to the front face of the 2x4s. And there was still like, you know, yeah, it's like that. But that's a good one from what they're showing. And so anyway, it's yes, those that form of window right there is
bad.
And even on yours,
it's so discouraging. I mean, I had more comments in that story than I've ever had. I mean, I probably had 80 people
wow.
DM me. Saying, gross. What do we do?
Sounds like your next video. That would be a good one.
That's why I was thinking about the hidden camera.
Well, so this is a question, and maybe this is way off, but do you think I know one of the reasons they probably backset the window so far like that was to help protect it from water damage and stuff to
I've
sit
on. I've thought about
it.
That. And
do you think that adds to the quickness of which they break down? Like the fact that they're just so exposed to the
elements? I think it would hurt them, yeah.
It can't help, right?
Yeah, yeah. If anything, it probably is not by a factor of much, but it definitely, you know, can't help.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wondered whether they were doing that to stop them from leaking.
Right.
But,
Well, I mean, there's a reason the top sash is further out than the bottom sash, because you don't want a puddle of water on top of one of the sashes, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's got to be some element to that in some regard.
I don't think design is necessarily what's driving that window look. I think cost is what's, you know, let's make it as cheap as possible. If it becomes more waterproof by, you know, thing, then that's just a bonus for them, because really cost is what they're chasing after. It's interesting. The comments on the logos and what's going on. But I mean, like this house right here, that is a no design house.
That looks computer generated.
It is.
Oh, I was like, that car's floating.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not. But that house is a non-design house.
Yeah. AI made it. You're saying it's a non-design house. Someone did design it, though, because it's clear they're trying to do things that are designy, right? but it's not well designed. Am I wrong?
What is that? I mean, what is that freaking thing? It's a Hadite block cinder wall with a shed attached to it. I mean, it's not anything. And then they forgot to add the porch, and they added the porch later. I mean, it's like that isn't a house. That is a glob of materials. I mean, it's just not a house.
It's and a good call quote. It a home.
It is. And so
it almost has like a shipping container vibe.
Yeah, and the way they're throwing weird materials on there, they've got, why did you put wood on that one wall?
I was saying it's the accent wall. It's just on the outside.
Yeah. It's just like it's so random. It's so haphazard. And it just drives me nuts.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying it is good. I'm just saying someone did intentionally think, like, someone thought, I'm going to put a wooden wall here. Because
you're saying like somebody designed it.
Designed
no,
this.
Here's the concept. Okay. I think this is non-design. Okay. What that means is that,
they just started building.
And then they get to the point where they go, gosh, it's kind of ugly. We need some wood on here.
Yeah.
And so it's
so you
not,
don't think there's plans
it's
for
not
that
a
house.
Design decision. It's a, almost a material selection.
My point is like there, you're saying it's a non-design. I'm saying like, let's move it to another analogy, right? Like, one person is sailing, they have a compass, they have a map, like that's the classic, that's like someone who you would say is like designing it. This person doesn't have a map, they got out on open water and they're like, well, we're still sailing, And I'm saying like they are sailing, they're just doing it really poorly. And so someone has decided, I've designed this house this way. Worked up AutoCAD or whatever they're using.
Definition of is.
No. Okay. What's his face?
Clinton said that. It depends what your definition of design is. Okay. Someone making the choice of to put wood there isn't design.
In my opinion,
that is
they designed
that is assembly. Yeah. That's not design.
Okay.
And so,
what would design be in your opinion?
Because
there's a cohesive ideal, okay, that's making decisions about how parts and pieces look and how it's coming together. Its purpose is figured out. It's the story. There's a narrative. There's
think about it like this. Like you said that builders of our day don't build anymore. They assemble, correct. Right? And so they're assembling a house based off of the type A, type B, type C block house that someone has designed, right? And so that's where I'm coming from.
No, I know. But it's just like you're dressing yourself in the morning and you grab a blue t-shirt.
Yeah.
You aren't styling yourself. You just grabbed a blue t-shirt. Okay. There wasn't really a design decision. They're just, there's blue.
Oh, you just needed a shirt.
You needed a shirt.
You needed a window.
I guess I'm going back to like, there was someone who put this house together.
Well, if I could stay on that styling thing, because I think it works because the difference is what I'm talking about is someone that's well-dressed. Mm-hmm. Okay. Where the patterns match the materials, it's a style, mm-hmm. right? Versus putting on blue jeans, putting on a white t-shirt and saying, I designed this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Does that work?
No, totally. I'm thinking there's more people in this equation than just because it's not like the builder's getting up there and just going like,
have at it.
Windows, it's like.
Want to bet?
Well, I don't know.
I guess that's what's happening.
But are we sure?
That's why it's so ugly.
Well, okay. Well, I'm just looking at the development. I'm like, all right, someone's putting together this image, right?
Here's mm-hmm. the other thing.
I don't know.
Here's the other reason why I can say it's non-design is because.
But are you saying the builder is the one who's like putting this together? He's not working with an architect who's come out of.
No.
Okay.
There is no designer.
All right.
There is no designer.
Do you think they just have plans and they're just like, here.
So like the builder makes the plans?
And here's what screws it up. Here's why it's confusing. Because the builder will say, yeah, I built that. Yeah, no, I designed that. I put that together.
No, you did not. Mm-hmm. You grabbed a something off the shelf and you assembled the parts and pieces. Okay. You didn't design that house. You're not a great designer. You're not an architect. You don't know what the you're doing. You know how to assemble a house. You know how to put on blue jeans and tennis shoes and a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah, that's crazy.
But here's the other piece of this thing is cost. Okay. Is because and craft, okay, for part of this build this show,
yeah.
Those houses destroy craft, okay. They destroy not this house, but especially that last house, because all of those parts and pieces, there's nothing custom on that house, okay. There everything
shiplapped wall is pretty.
Everything is off the shelf, okay. There's nothing that is crafted. To do that house.
Absolutely not.
Nothing.
Nothing.
And so everything is, you bought a 2x6, you bought a 1x8, you bought a batten board. The windows are from the window store, the doors from the door store, you know, that railing's from the railing store. It's just, there's nothing, you know, conceived by a craftsman to make something more beautiful or more interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like what you're doing is your house. You are putting your heart and soul, your craft, the things you've learned into making that house more special, right? Mm-hmm. None of that's there.
Yeah. And I actually listened to you for the past few years talk about historic precedent. I was always like, yeah, I mean, I kind of always wonder, like, why does that matter? But the translation of you saying historic precedent, I realized is when people did things right. You know, like when you say historic precedent, you could pretty much translate that to like when we built correct, you know, isn't that kind of like, that's what you're saying?
Looking at that English wall and the historic precedent for that is when they built that, right?
Yeah.
You know, when they knew how to craft,
when they knew what they were doing, yeah. Versus now, like I realize why you say that so much. Like before I didn't really know why.
Yeah. And that's part of that, why we're going through those house styles and looking at that stuff, because we are looking at precedent, because that's the bar that we want to mm-hmm. achieve. That's the standard for quality today, because you look at a house like this, there is no historic precedent for this house, mm-hmm. right? There is, you know, it's not nostalgic. It's not, it isn't, you know, heartwarming, right? Mm-hmm. You aren't drawn or attracted to it. I mean, it looks like someone couldn't decide whether to build an office building, strip mall, or a house. And they ended up with a little bit of both.
Yeah. And you brought up I'm assuming you're talking about my mantle, because mm-hmm. that's the yeah. biggest thing I've yeah. done at my house. I kind of had this like realization going through that too, on why people don't do that. Because I kind of costed it out at like somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000 for me to do that with really? All my time into yeah. it, partly because I was just staring at it for hours, so I didn't know what I was doing. I had to sit there and like think through everything.
Yeah, no.
So I'm thinking, like, would someone want to spend that on a mantle? And I think the vast majority would probably say no. You know,
but I would say that by the third time you do it, that would be down to about $8,000.
Yeah.
And, you know,
well, I'm also accounting me moving the wall, buying the fireplace, everything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but I'm just thinking, like, that's a lot. And I see, like, why people wouldn't want to, like, I don't think they should make the decision not to do crafted things. But if they're trying to get the most out of their money, they're like, dang, I can't afford that. You know?
What if they're making it for the first time? Like, what if that house is being built?
Well, I think.
Is it cheaper?
Well, I think we're talking about.
Because you're not moving walls. I guess that's where I'm.
I'm kind of talking about the average consumer.
Yeah, yeah.
So you are you going against what we've said on this podcast that craft isn't worth it?
No, I think it's worth it. I'm thinking the vast majority doesn't appreciate it and think that it's worth it.
Well, I knew that, but what it does though, okay, mm-hmm. is that you built that pediment properly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you being able to go to a customer and then say, "Hey, I'm really wanting something over this mantle, make it, your understanding and ability to build a proper pediment now versus, you know, something that, you know, comes from Home Depot is that the difference between them getting that from Home Depot versus you crafting it is something that you would steer and try to look. I'm always educating our clients. I'm always raising the bar and saying, well, if we did it this way, or if we could do it this, well, why would we do that? Well, let me show you some historic pictures of how that used to look and how they, oh, I really like that. Yeah, that's what I'm going for. Mm-hmm. They probably 90% of the people you would talk to about a mantle, probably 98% have never seen a good pediment and a good mantle. I agree. And so you being able to educate them and explain to them, push, you know, takes them. Like, you just ask anybody on the street, would you want that? No, I wouldn't want that. But if they're shopping for a mantle and you can say, hey, here's this, here, A, B, and C, okay? Mm-hmm. And A is a little bit more expensive than, you know, C, but look how much better it is and look at the detail that goes in it. Oh, yeah, no, I like that. You have now pushed that client towards to the B or the A, right? And so
and I agree that we should be having those conversations and steering them towards craft. I'm just thinking of the person who is interested in this, I guess. They're not going to be like, I don't know.
I think about, like, so one of my good friends is involved in flipping homes, and like, I think he would look at this.
How is that a good friend? Ooh. No, I'm just kidding.
We're tight. I've been talking about the podcast for like a year and a half now. And he asked the other day, he's like, what's passion for craft? And I was like, okay, good. He doesn't listen. looking at this house, I think he could see the dollar signs in it and go, because I mean, his thing at the end of the day is, how much money can I make off of this property? I know he has no desire for, you know, craft, no desire for longevity of it. Just like, how much can I get it on the market for? How much can I turn it for?
It's a spreadsheet.
It's a spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And that's very much how his mind works and everything else. I think he would look at it and go, well, if someone's buying it, what's the big deal? You know? And I think about him a lot in like a lot of these things where I'm like, would he want the next level? Like, would he want something else on top of this?
And good. So I'm that's like, a good interesting thing.
In his house, looking at his kitchen flip, because he just did a kitchen flip on his house, I was like, okay, I don't know. I think he would, because it's actually like a good flip. And he's like done some good stuff to it, where I'm like, okay, I think you spent more money than you would have spent on another one of your properties for something else like that.
I mean, he did a kitchen for his own house and more money than he would spend on his.
I think so. I think he did.
Which makes sense if it's just a spreadsheet.
Yes. But also the design choices that he made, and I'm using design in the element of, in the idea that he likes
materials he chose.
Well, and I think he designed the kitchen. Like he was the one who sat down, made the blueprints in CAD or whatever and like did it. And I think the design choices he made because he was like, this is gonna look good. But he also it's all farmhouse modern, like that's all like the design that he picked. And the nicest things in the place are the appliances. It's not necessarily like the cabinets or the trim or anything like that. So it's just an interesting dichotomy. I don't know.
Well, we're chasing a bunch of rabbits here. Going back to this.
go back to those shoe boxes. Yeah, those are great.
What's the story with these?
Well, it's the idea of simplification.
Houses? These are for sale, I think, in East Far East, like other side of Dallas from Lennar. And they're like 180,000 or something.
And how many square feet are they?
I mean, it looks or like just a couple.
500 square feet.
Well, and that's why people were like in the comments. I saw the ad on Instagram too. I was like, I wonder what people are saying. So I went in and they're like, America's over. And like, we're screwed. Like, you know?
How many square feet is that? Do we know?
I don't recall.
I literally think it's like 400 or 500. I thought that was more just funny, but like to me, like this one is like it kind of goes back to that logo simplification, like lowest common denominator type.
Well, I mean, you know, they are copying a Craftsman style house or a bungalow, right? The guy even got the three over the one windows. They got the tapered columns. brick pedestals. You know, 2-car garage is a little bit, you know, leave it to beaverish. But yeah, I mean, that's a clear tipping their hat to nostalgia, you know, the past, you know, and they're, you know, pulling on heartstrings to make, oh, that is a home. Oh, I've always liked those homes. I've always mm-hmm. liked that style.
So this one, is it designed?
There's definitely intention behind it from like everything you just said.
Yeah.
I think it looks more designed.
I guess I'm getting hung up on whether an architect would say it's designed. It only because it's a copy of the past. That's kind of modern architects kind of their beef against classicism or their beef against these things is that it's not original. Mm-hmm. And therefore, since it's not original, it's not good. And therefore it's pastiche. It's
I wonder where do they get that logic?
Because they look at, Frank Gehry, and they look at the architect, and the highest level of achievement of the architect is the artist, is the original thinker, and if you really want to be great, you want to be a great original thinker. And the thing that made Frank Lloyd Wright so great was he was such an original. So originality is this, you know, brass ring that they all attain for. And so you end up with the reason why they design and put together ugly buildings is because they're trying to be original.
I was going to say, one of the things, like when you look at the lowest common, or the not lowest common denominator, but the common denominator between all of the like people that they're trying to emulate, they all did something kind of weird and out there. Like the closest architects to today that we talk about are the ones that have done the most weird stuff, I guess, right? Like Frank Lloyd Wright was very like long and horizontal, which was not the standard. And then who's the crumpled paper guy?
Frank Gehry,
like he's crazy. And so like there's all these names where we're like, wow, look at X architect. And they're the ones who get talked about the most.
It seems like an ego thing.
It totally is.
Oh, it's a totally ego thing.
But that's what I'm saying is like, why they're striving to be like it, because it's like they're the most talked about architects. They're not talking about Quinlan Terry. They're not talking about like those.
But really, I mean, you know, value wise, okay, and I know you're not defending that position, but the, you know, it's just like someone, you know, wanting clicks, right? It's mm-hmm. it's just that attention. Hey, come look at me. Make sure I'm original. And this is why it matters for us as a culture, right? That we build beautiful things instead of building ugly things, is because it influences us.
CNN.
So those buildings are like clickbait. It's like, oh,
totally, totally they are. And
that makes sense, but it's weird.
We talked about the Balboa Museum in Portugal or Spain, wherever it is. The Frank Gehry one.
Oh, yeah.
There's no one. Balboa is a small city. It doesn't, you know, it's pretty insignificant, but it becomes this place, this destination because of, you know, them building that museum there and Gehry doing that museum there. So I guess I would rather have a neighborhood of these houses than the previous house we're looking at.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is interesting. So I think movies are a great example where, like Marvel, quality kind of went down the toilet, but they were like making more and more stuff and they were really like cranking stuff out. And then, the head of Marvel, Kevin Feige, came out and said, we're really pulling back from making a lot of content. We're going to make good content again. But there's been a period of about 10 years, well, maybe less than that, 5 years of like really bad movies and really bad TV shows. No plot, or the plot doesn't make sense and all this other stuff. And so now I think it's starting, like the pendulum's gone here and it's starting to swing back to where we're going to start seeing more thought through quality movies from all of them. So now we're 1960s, the ranch style kind of pitters out, right? I'm not trying to say whatever. Yeah. But then, so when the pendulum starts swinging out further and further, I mean, home building is obviously going to have a longer time period because you consume a movie in an hour, 45 minutes, and you consume a home in 30 year mortgage. So 30 years. So when does that pendulum start swinging back? When's the time when you think people are going to start noticing, oh, this
is
bad.
That's a good point.
Oh, they notice it now.
Do they? Because why are the houses like that still being built? Or are those the movies that are being made where people are like, yeah, I'm not going to see that? And like, when are the ratings going to come in, I guess, on some of this stuff?
Okay, so.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, and it's a good question. The no one knows, all right? And so, but you got to look at, you know, McMansions, okay? Yeah. McMansions are fairly universally panned, okay? Whereas when they are being,
what do you mean panned?
Like bad, boo.
Everyone thinks that.
They're terrible. And the gaudy, crazy, silly stuff that was done with those things has been made fun of enough. If you guys haven't followed McMansion, you know, it was a website that this girl did, uneducated, like not an architect, criticizing McMansions. Have you looked at her site?
Mm-hmm, I have seen.
But she was a lay person looking at these things going, what is going on? This is ridiculous. And so as I do my posts, as I do, on the Wednesday videos, or as I did that story on those windows, the universal.
She's funny too. Sorry.
Yeah, no, she's good. And so, yeah, there's one of her things. The universal disgust with this, okay, is, you know, universal. Control V.
Well, I think that's part of what your mission has been, and we recently joined you on this mission. You know,
I think the difference is Marvel is, if like there was one home builder in America and he was building houses and people stopped buying him, he would start doing things that were different.
Yeah,
but there are 20,000 home builders.
That's what I was going to say.
And they're all kind of. It's the tail wagging the dog. Mm-hmm. They don't know which way's up.
Yeah.
Because they're running out there going, I got to put product out there. And they're not really thinking about design.
Yeah.
And so there isn't, I'll say this, and I realize that it's not completely true, but there isn't a designer in the process of building out like that house, like her control paste, you know, cut and paste thing on that house. That house is a non-design house. Okay. Well, and you, Jackson, you would say, well, someone designed it.
Yeah.
No. Okay.
They didn't design it well. If you're talking in my language, you say they didn't design it well. They didn't know what they were doing when they designed it.
They didn't know what they were doing. They couldn't. Yeah. There isn't a, I don't think there's a, design ideal there.
No.
Right.
No.
And there's not a philosophy. Except they like arch windows.
Is big house. Let's make a big house. They probably started from the inside out. We've talked about this before, this idea too, and I think this plays into it as well, but the houses are not designed from the outside in anymore. They're designed from the inside out now.
No, and so...
Because they're like, I want a big family room in the middle.
Yeah.
And I want a big arched opening way. And like, the, you know, right?
And I want it to look traditional, so they put gables on it.
Right,
and so,
right.
You know, and but I've always liked arches. and you know that window that's always so famous, and they put it in
what's
there.
What's telling
and it,
you what, that
it's
part?
It's called Palladian.
That away.
There's a Palladian window, and a really ugly one.
Oh yeah,
because the window store said we don't do Palladians, and then they said, "Well,
buy two windows
but,
from
but,
you."
But what if I did small windows on the side? And they go, "Yeah, that could work."
But that's exactly how that went down.
I think it is too, because you can actually see a little bit of the brick in between the two windows, which is hilarious.
Yeah, it's a
mess.
But you're trying to the question is, when does it change? And I think
that's why we're here.
To totally,
educate. We're trying to steer a battleship, and you can't turn it on a dime and change. So you're talking about the pendulum.
Yeah,
I would say that.
We're here, 1960s, right? This is like good building.
Here's what I would say.
And we're starting to go. So I guess 1960s till now, we've started swinging. How far back have we gone?
The worst residential building in America happens between 70s and 80s.
Okay. The worst.
The worst.
Wait a minute. That math doesn't add up, right?
Why?
60s. pendulum swings, that means the worst is the 70s.
You're saying the 60s. But I wouldn't say the just because there was a style of house that was built.
When was the best? When was the best house built?
Well, I mean, if you...
Because we can find an equation here. Let's get some math going.
Start, if you consider that production builders, starting when they started in 1950, mm-hmm. were the start of bad design. Okay. That's when the pendulum started swinging
backwards
the other way. You could even say that it started swinging backwards at the end of the arts and crafts period. Okay. That was the last original.
What year was that?
1920, 1910, somewhere in that range. I mean,
20s to 70s. So that implies 50 years of swing from one side to the other. Another 25 years to get back to the middle. So put us at 2005. Does that add up?
Well, you could point to things like, I would say that the 50 years doesn't work. Your math doesn't work. That's why it's not a pendulum, because
it's a pendulum.
Bad houses in the 70s, mm-hmm. okay, or the 80s. I think bad houses today aren't quite as bad.
Oh, okay.
So I think we've swung back.
Sorry, swing back. It is a pendulum.
There is.
Cornered him. We got him.
There is things like when I try to get positive with people, because normally I'm pretty critical, but when I say, look, there's some positive signs out there. Those positive signs would be the Institute of Classical Architecture and Art, Classicism, which started by Frank Christine. Frank was the first director of that in 1990-something, 91, 92. She was the director of that in New York. She was in a closet at NYU, I think is what she told me. That was the first office. And now it's grown to all these chapters. It's grown to all these members. They are out there educating.
That's a big sign. That's a good sign.
Mm-hmm. It is a good sign. And so I would think that new urbanism in Seaside, which started in the 80s with Seaside and then has expanded out, is a good sign. So I think that there's positive things happening in building and in design in general. Traditional neighborhood developments are a more positive sign. Getting back to porches and sidewalks and stuff like that.
The reason I brought up the pendulum. The reason I brought up Marvel is because I think I was just trying to think of like a quick hit, like art. Like art is what defines our culture, and houses is probably one of the most permanent forms of art within our culture. Or like one of the longest standing, one of the ones we engage with on a daily basis that like defines our culture. One of our goals here is to like hopefully curb the view of our culture as America, as wherever, whatever country you live in, and start bringing it back towards traditional design and beautiful things. And
So,
I think we've seen like many trends within art. Like I was even thinking of modern art. I just don't know enough about art to speak into it as much, but like, I don't remember the guy who it was who, had a literal toilet, as an art exhibit. Mm-hmm. Is like, so that's not art. Right. But there's been, it's like kind of like the same thing with the modern houses where it's like, well, someone's slapping a name on it and calling it art, but it's not art.
Totally.
Believe it or not, I've actually dove into that.
Okay, well there we go. Should we chat about that a little?
I thought you were gonna say, believe it or not, I actually like the toilet.
I think it's a piece of crap. No offense. I killed that. There it is. There's also a can of Howard feces Mutt. Isn't it as Mutt well.
Mutt, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember the architect's name.
That looks like
it's a urinal, not a toilet.
Looks like a San Francisco public restroom. The guy just smoking in there.
There's another guy who poops in a can.
Yeah. Yeah. If you watch Roger Scruton's thing on beauty, he does this amazing 1 hour thing on beauty. And one of his points is like, what's going on with that? Like, why would an artist can be art
family friendly?
beep.
You know why? It's because our culture gives everyone a trophy and doesn't tell you're stupid. Well, like, you belong in a mental hospital and you're not an artist.
Yeah.
Well, what he said was, is that, you know, the artist can self-proclaim today where, you know, it's art because I say it's art.
Mm-hmm.
And, but if you look at philosophically, okay, this guy doing the urinal, or most of modern art, it is devoid of belief in an absolute. Okay. It's a devoid of belief in truth, and it's a devoid of belief in beauty. Okay. And so, you know, a lot of architects and artists would make fun of the idea that I would even say beauty exists because.
Wow. They've got so long to go if they would question beauty exists. They need to go into like another field.
What they say is that beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Who whatever I say is beauty is beautiful. And so I, you know, in other words, I can determine what truth is. And this idea of relativism that, you know, truth is relative. And so your truth is not my truth. And that, you know, the Harvard professor said, I expressed my truth. And, you know, the whole thing with Harvard and, you know, their motto is veritas, which is truth. And now for her to explain, you know, I didn't express my truth or whatever one she said, right, means that truth is relative, means that there is no absolute standard for what matters. So therefore she can, you know, cheat on her things anyway, it's just
truth is relative is a really nice idea until you get rear-ended. And then when the guy who rear-ended you says, well, I don't think I did that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of...
Well, also, I think there's...
It's a nice idea until then.
There is truth into the... in the eye of the beholder. There's truth in that. Because I think we've even looked at some houses and I've said, hey, that I like that. And Jackson's like, I don't like that. Like, you know, like that has happened. Like, we don't have to all agree on what
beauty is. Not having to all agree is different from saying that beauty is beauty and truth is absolute.
I think I can go, I don't like that the best. Like what you, I don't like that. I think is different than me saying, oh, that's ugly. You know what I mean? Because I think we've all agreed on a lot of these houses that are like,
well, and there's art that you get, you have a curator takes you around and shows you what's going on and why the artist did that. And you go like, oh, okay, I can appreciate what they're doing now. Whereas I stood up to it and I was like, that's ugly. And so, here's the point. The same time that our culture began to, you know, do this kind of artwork, it was culturally a rejection of truth, beauty, goodness, all that kind of stuff. And so you begin to see architecture at the same sign at the exact same time or very close to that time beginning to practice modernism and practice, you know, stripping away of ornamentation, stripping away of things and glass boxes and, you know, other things like that. And so the Xerox of the Xerox of the Xerox later is that a guy, you know, builds an ugly house and goes, well, that's, you know, it's beautiful because I say it's beautiful. And so, and his standard for whether it sells or not is proof of whether it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so they go, well, you know, I don't need design because it sells.
Yeah.
And so anyway,
what's weird about that is like the toilet thing. Who gets credit for that art? Is it the guy? It's got to be the toilet manufacturer, right?
Art has become all conceptual art. And so it's no longer, you don't have to practice any of your craft. I mean, who is it? Koons, the ones who does the blow up dolls.
Yeah.
He states that I don't even touch my art because I'm totally conceptual. So the idea of craft and the idea of making those things, oh, someone else does that. I mean, which is crazy to me when you think about Michelangelo and you think about some of the artists and the time they spent practicing their craft. And you know, that artist today is, you know, can ignore craft and it's the most important thing is the idea, not the craft, not me making that thing.
Mm-hmm. So here's what I'm thinking. One, I really think beauty, truth is relative, all those things. I think we should maybe devote an episode to that to talk about that a little bit more. especially with the Fibonacci's sequence and like beauty in nature and all that stuff. I think we should devote a little bit of time on that, because I think even just hearing you say, wait, beauty is in the eye of the beholder and other things like that, I'm like, I think other people would comment that and think the same thing. And so I think if you've got a good rebuttal to that, I think it'd be cool to explore that and go into that a little bit, because I think it also speaks to a lot of the ideas of what we're talking about here is like, if beauty really is in the eye of the beholder, why is some architecture quote unquote good? Why is some bad? You know what I mean? So I think that's, we can shelf that. And I think we jump back to kind of one of the things you just said, which was the modernism is stripping away of all of these like classical elements and like good things and just getting to like the basis of the thing. And I think we finish out this discussion because the initial is we were talking about how we've taken really beautifully designed things and simplified them to their simplest version of themselves. And I think we should
if you go,
I like that idea. We can dedicate, I think we have a lot to talk about there.
Yeah.
If you go to, back to the thing, the modernism and the point that I wasn't able to make is that a lot of, or didn't make, was that a lot of,
and before you make that point,
a lot of those houses aren't about, a lot of builders look at those simple houses and go, yes, because
cha-ching.
Yes, they know that it, they know that they can buy everything off the shelf. They know they can put those things together, that a lot of them are ugly. So design doesn't matter. So I can put anything out there and it's going to sell.
So in the spreadsheet, it's minus man hours for everything that's not custom. It's just, that's just an install amount of time. That's not a build it amount of time, right?
Essentially.
Mm-hmm. So, exactly.
And so while you get to go to Austin and it becomes a very modern city as far as modern architecture, modern design, and contemporary builds, contemporary designs, that people look at this and think that's smart. Okay. People look at this and go, oh, that's really cutting edge. Mm-hmm. Right. When really it's ugly. And so they, anyway, my point was, is that builders don't look at this and go, oh, we're really doing great design houses. Builders look at this and go, it's cheap and fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now I've heard Matt say on some of the builds that they're building that the precision that goes into some of these modern builds is really, really difficult to put together. So I haven't explored that, and I suspect there is a lot of truth to that.
I can see that in some of them.
And so he's saying there's beauty in the precision of it all?
He would say that there's craft in the precision of it all. That the 16th of an inch that they're looking for, or the 32nd of an inch, or whatever caliper dialed in is, he says that those are really, you've got these even and sharp lines that have to be straight.
I can see that. That
have to be perfect in order to look good.
Yeah. That would be like high end modern, not this.
Correct.
This would be easy.
Yeah. I mean, that's
we could build that in a weekend.
Yeah. $300,000 house, $500,000 house. He's talking about the $5 million version.
Yeah.
Of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That has been designed.
Yeah. Because if you think about it,
has been put together by an architect.
There's not a bunch of trim to hide all your construction, mistakes. You know?
Exactly.
So, makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you really can rough it out with trim as your safety net.
Well, if sheetrock and paint and, you know, they're throwing it up over top of these things, it's mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your margin of error goes to an eighth of an inch rather than.
Well, probably to 2 inches.
To two. Wow. There you go. Well, cool. Any other closing thoughts on Austin? Did we cover everything you're thinking about?
Yeah. No, I think so.
I think we opened up a lot of ideas for more talks.
For real. I thought, Richard, it was interesting when you mentioned that, and I feel like what you were saying about the logos on the left.
I thought that was interesting, too.
I feel like it's almost like a McMansion would be like if they designed the logo on the left from the logo on the right without knowing the original. Mm-hmm. You know, they tried to reverse engineer and simplify the
version. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That would also be a very fun game to take a bunch of graphic designers, give them a bunch of, like, let's say they're from America, give them a bunch of European logos. Like European car logos, no one knows, and take a simplified version of them and then say, all right, make this more beautiful and see what happens.
Yeah, that would be, dang, the Pringles guy lost his head. That's simplified.
They really did simplify the Pringles logo. I mean, they wanted the mustache to be the thing.
All right.
All right.
Well, thanks for watching this episode of Passion for Craft, and hopefully we get some beauty questions answered next time.